You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. This podcast is brought to you by Penji. I'm your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we have Tom Kulzer on the show. Tom is the founder and chief executive officer, that's CEO, at AWeber, a leader in small business email marketing software. Tom started the company in his apartment back in 1998, and now they have over 100 employees, over 100,000 customers, and they did not receive an ounce of venture capital money or any type of funding at all. In the early days, Tom sold computer hardware in the mid-1990s, where he realized the sales prospects that he was talking to were failing because of a lack of proper follow-up. By automating the delivery of how personalized emails to prospects, company-wide sales skyrocketed and sales associates had additional time to spend pursuing new prospects, which is kind of the reason why we send emails today to all of our prospects. So really, really interesting conversation that we've had with Tom today, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Now, the reason why I wanted to interview Tom specifically is because anytime you can have a conversation with somebody who bootstrapped a company to where AWeber's growth is now, to how it started, you have to take that person up on the conversation. So just the mindset is just completely different than that of like a corporate person or even an entrepreneur who has received funding. You have to be a little bit more resourceful, and every dollar counts, which you can kind of hear that from the conversation. Every dollar and every penny counts, for that matter. You can hear that in the conversation as you continue to listen. Tom also created an email newsletter in 1996 when nobody was using email newsletters. And in my opinion, I think that was kind of the catalyst to why he started AWeber, was seeing this opportunity in order to talk to somebody. And so we talk about that. And we also talk about the glamour of getting funding versus not getting funding and what that looks like. Lastly, and I think this is the most important thing, is the conversation that we had about company culture. So, and I asked a very specific question to Tom, and it says, and I ask, when I think of AWeber, I think culture, people who love their job, a world-class support. What do you think of it? And that's what I say to Tom. So stay tuned till you hear Tom's answer to this question, because it will ignite a fire under your butt. It's going to motivate you. It's going to make you realize what's really important, and that's your people. So culture, ties, we even talk about wearing ties, and then the slide that they have in the office. So when I say slide, they legitimately have a slide inside their office, two slides, and they even have races, which is pretty insane. So that and so much more on today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co. PENJI.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Jonathan.
Anytime, man. So before we get into this episode, we have to lay the foundation to let people know why you're an expert at what you do. AWeber, if nobody understands who they are, what they do, they are one of the leaders in the email marketing space. So my first question is, how did you go from apartment idea to one of the most influential leaders in email marketing in the world?
It's kind of a happy accident, honestly. I was in college. So we just celebrated our 20th anniversary, actually just a month ago, but we just had a big party last weekend, which is pretty cool. Nice. But I was studying mechanical engineering in college at the time, going to Penn State. And I was selling wireless modems back before we all had iPhone and Android in our pocket with multiple megabits of connectivity. The world still used dial-up in most places. And I was selling these wireless modems on the side as like a consultant and going to computer shows and that sort of thing. And I would get leads from the computer shows. And you know, you have to follow up with people. You have to ask them questions. You have to make sure they got enough information. You have to educate them. And over time, I kind of felt like the manual process was a little like unnecessary. So I wrote a little Perl script that sent a series of follow-up email messages on kind of an automated timed basis. And it worked really well. And I shared it with a number of other people that were in the same company in the different regions of the country so that we could kind of test like what worked and what didn't, like what copy worked and what didn't, and get feedback. And one thing led to another. I switched majors to finance, and ended up leaving that company to focus on school. And a bunch of those people that I was working with started coming to me saying, "Hey, like, can I get that thing that you were doing with the email follow-up?" And I was like, "Well, it doesn't really exist commercially. Like, there's nothing that does that out there." So this was like 97, 98. And after a couple dozen people came to me and said, "Hey, can I get that thing?" I said, maybe there's a business idea in that.
That's awesome.
You know, one thing led to another and AWeber was born. So originally originally it was Automated Web Assistant, which is a little too long to like name your company and to name a product. So we kind of shortened it and it kind of went, you know, it's like you try to think about that. It's like Automated Web Assistant, like AWeb Ass. No, that's a very different business, like probably inappropriate. So it kind of got shortened to AWeber. And the rest is kind of history. It's a unique name and you know, grew from there. A lot of word of mouth.
Well, we're actually going to get into that. And I think what you said at the end, word of mouth, is very intriguing to me. And so before we get into all that, you have over 100 employees now, 20 years. And you have over 100,000 customers from based off of my research and understanding of your molecular intake or whatever it is that the wording is that is escaping me. And also, you've never raised an ounce of funding. So this is going to be the hardest question of the day. But tell us a little bit more about how you were able to do all of this.
Yeah. Wow. That's like the super open-ended question there. You know, when I kind of look at a business overall, I kind of look at like three fundamental pillars. You know, you're building a service that has value for your customers. You're building, you know, an environment and a team and, you know, kind of that environment that those team members are coming to every day. And the office space and the perks and those sort of things that we have, the benefits, compensation, and so forth. And then you're building like an overall kind of, you know, profitable company that needs to exist in the long term. And, it, you know, I think that there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there. There's certainly many that raise funding in order to, you know, reach a certain scale where their business becomes cost effective, where they're able to start making money. But there's also an element of raising money, I think, that is often looked at as the like kind of destination is like, if I can convince an investor to invest in us, like we succeeded. And like, frankly, to me, like you've not succeeded until you've delivered a product that your customers are willing to pay for that actually supports the business endeavor. And once you have that combination of that whole dynamic and the three pillars and kind of the think of it as a stool without any one of those legs, the whole thing kind of falls over. So if you don't have a great team, you know, not going to work. If you don't have a great product, it's not going to work. And if you don't have a profitable business in the long run, it's not going to work. So it was really one of those things where we scaled kind of within, you know, within our own capabilities and within our own profitability. And there were times when, you know, we were a little more extended than others. But we've never grown in a way that has put the business at risk. And I think that overall that provides a great basis for which to develop a really long-term viable company and product and value that's contributed to the world.
I think what's really interesting, you're 100% right. A lot of people, when they hear startup or business, they immediately say, like, I can't wait to get funding. Or if I could just meet a Mark Cuban or a Shark or whatever it is to give me whatever ounce of money I need to make my business profitable. Do you feel like the world of bootstrapping and being cash flow positive without funding isn't glamorized enough?
Yeah, I think so. It's not rewarded in the marketplace. You know, it's certainly from a PR standpoint, like, it's not sexy. Yeah. You don't get coverage by not taking someone else's money.
But the artistry behind it is so, to me, is beautiful, you know, because like you had to go through some crazy innovative things and processes and procedures in order to make this work.
Yeah, from my perspective, like when you raise funding, it changes the entire dynamic around how you make decisions. It changes timelines. You know, most VC, most private equity, like, they have a timeline. They want a return, and you need to make, it's very much like being a public company. Like, you have to hit certain benchmarks and certain milestones, and if you don't, like, they're going to penalize you heavily. And that just kind of comes back, and it ends up biting customers. Like, I can't tell you how many different email marketing companies, frankly, that have come and gone in the 20 years that we've been doing what we've been doing. Yeah. Because, you know, they raised money, they started, it's kind of like when you get a cash infusion, you kind of start to spend like you have that permanently. Well, at a certain point, it runs out if you're spending above what your means are, and your means are like how many customers you have and what the value is that they're placing on it and the revenues that are generated there. So it's, you know, it changes, I think, how you make decisions in ways that are not always good. You know, there's certain scenarios where you absolutely need to raise funding, and it is absolutely the best thing to do. And I think there's a lot of other scenarios where it's absolutely a terrible idea.
Well, what has not receiving funding, what has that taught you? Because, I mean, again, you've had this success and these systems and these processes and procedures in the very beginning that allowed you to get to where you are. So I'm just curious, like, what has this idea of not relying on anybody, what is this idea of, like, not relying on anybody other than you and your team in order to make the company successful?
It can, you know, I think it's interesting. Like, it can be, at times it can feel a little isolating. In other times it can feel really freeing, because at the end of the day, like, you know, obviously we answer to all of our customers. You know, I answer to all of our team members in one way or another. So, you know, you're making decisions on everyone's behalf. But at the end of the day, kind of the buck stops with me, and, you know, there's really no one else to fault. So it's like, you know, it's both lower pressure and higher pressure, you know, if that makes any sense. But I think that it forces you to be efficient. Like, there's no waste in our organization. I'm sure there's some, but like, it's really small. You know, versus a lot of others where, you know, if the cash is flowing, like, hey, why not spend it? You know, it's not my money, it's somebody else's money. Whereas, like, literally every dollar that comes out of this business that we spend is a dollar potentially away from, you know, overall profitability. And obviously we spend a lot of money in reinvesting in our customers and our team and our product and so forth. It's, you know, it's funny. I'll hear from somebody every now and then. It's like, oh yeah, you wrote this software ages ago and you haven't done anything to it since then. It's like, hey, you want to come here and tell the like 60 engineers that sit over there that they haven't been doing anything for the last couple of years. So
that's so powerful, man. Such a powerful response. I appreciate your transparency. Back in, I believe, 1996, you created an email newsletter.
Yeah.
And
wow, you really dug through the internet to pull that one out.
Yeah. I like doing research, man. I like to get to know the people I'm talking to. And I believe you said that that was how you kind of got your first 100 customers.
Yeah.
So can you explain it in a way where, from your experience, how you teach others to obtain their first 100?
Yeah, for me, at the time, it was really about kind of building an audience, you know. And honestly, for me, it was basically a marketing newsletter. It was me trying to educate myself and trying to surround myself with people that were smarter than me, you know, that had been there, done that. And I had many of those folks that had joined the newsletter early on because there weren't a whole lot of resources online. And it was basically like a moderated, you know, email newsletter where people would submit questions. I'd pick what I thought were the most interesting questions to myself and others. I'd send them out. And then over the course of the week, I'd get responses and I would kind of curate, you know, responses to then send out the following week with some new questions. It was really about kind of building that audience. And then once I had something of value to provide them, you know, it was like, hey, I'm doing this AWeber thing. Like, here's what it does. Like, what's your feedback? Like, I used it a lot for beta testers. Like, some of our early beta testers came from that newsletter. And then most of our early customers came from that. And then the word of mouth that came from those people telling others that they knew. So for me, it's, you know, surround yourself with people that have been there, done that, in as much as you possibly can. I think that it's really easy to say, oh, I can't, or I don't know anybody. You know, lots of people, and it's really not hard to get in touch with people these days. Like, I'm not hard to find online. Mm-hmm. You're not hard to find online. Like, you know, and it depends on the degree in which you want to stalk people online. Like, you can really go hardcore and dig up a lot of info on people. It's really something where you just got to start and you just got to try. Cause if you don't try, like, nothing's going to happen.
So. Yeah, very true. I mean, so you mentioned word of mouth, and it's something that is like the cornerstone to any business. And from you mentioning it a couple of times in this conversation so far, I could tell it's an important factor to your business. How do you think you've been able to get your customers to love you so much that they refer their friends and their friends and their friends?
Yeah, I think it's, there's a couple of things that kind of go into it. I think there's an element of, it's kind of that value equation. It's like, if I'm asking for you to pay me a dollar every month, I hope to be generating at least $100 in return to you in exchange there. So from a customer standpoint, like, who wouldn't put up a buck to get $100 in return? Like, I'd do that all day long. Hell, I'd give you a dollar if you only gave me a buck of, you know, $1.05 back. Like, that's just, you know, it's kind of the economics of how that works. So it's, you know, provide a tremendous value in the lives of your customers and their businesses. I think there's also an element of, you know, treat people like people. It kind of goes to our overall mission at AWeber, is connecting people in remarkable ways. If you treat people as a person and not as a number, not as a conversion funnel, not as web traffic, it's like, you're not web traffic. There are people that are reading stuff on your website that, like, have problems and they want to solve them. And I think it's really easy to forget that there's, like, a person with a life and maybe a family or kids or grandparents or whatever they happen to be and whatever their situation happens to be at the time on the other end of, you know, the phone or the computer or whatever it happens to be. And I think that being able to remember that and connect with people in those, like, tangible, you know, meaningful ways, it really kind of inspires that overall word of mouth. Is like, hey, these people get me and they care about the outcomes that I have. It makes others, you know, trust you more and be more willing to, you know, kind of put their name on the line of, like, having recommended something. Like, I'm always very hesitant to recommend something unless I believe really strongly in what it is that that company's doing.
Yeah. Well
said. So, yeah.
It's great. Now, when I think of AWeber, I think of culture. I think of people who love their job. I think of world-class support. You didn't pay me to say those things. I chose to use those words. But I've met people on your team. When you look at the advertisements, you see people, which is always great. And I think, again, I'll say it again, I've always felt that AWeber has incredible support. So when you hear those, my words of what I believe AWeber is, I would love to hear what you think AWeber is to you, and how did you ultimately get there? Because again, you started from your apartment, and now here you are with slides in your office. I mean, how are we getting there?
Yeah. You know, I think when I hear AWeber, like, what do I think of? It's the connections. It's those connections with real people. It's all of the, you know, I'm a car guy. So like I used to come in, when I come into the office, like I always got a kick out of like seeing everybody's car in the parking lot. And it's like in one way or another, like this thing at AWeber is like, it's paying for all these cars. Like, that's really cool. It's like such a nonsense kind of thing, but like, totally. It's kind of this, like, it's this like kind of living organism that just kind of grows over time. And you know, so it's about the impact of what we do here on a daily basis and how that affects all the people that are out there in the world. So it's like, you know, the most tangible thing to me on a daily basis, like the people that are sitting next to me here in the office, you know, and beyond that, it's folks like yourself and others that like we interact with on a regular basis. And then beyond that, it's, you know, it's not just our customers, but it's all of our customers' customers or our customers' prospects and customers' subscribers, which are like literally hundreds of millions of people. And when I look at the, you know, volume of mail that we send on a monthly basis, it's, you know, in the billions, like multiple billions of emails every month.
That's awesome.
So it's just, it's like all of these lives that like start with this like one thing that happened 20 years ago and have gradually branched out from there, and the interactions and responses that we have, it's really cool. Like we highlight them at our, you know, we have like a internal team meeting or a whole company meeting once a month. And like, we highlight little examples of, you know, what's going on in the world, what our customers are doing. And like, there was one recently where it was like a nonprofit in Africa that was like making schools safer by like installing bathrooms. Like, wow. Such a, like a, something I would have never thought of, but like the fact that they have bathroom facilities in the school makes the students that much safer. And it's just like, you know, it's one, you know, random customer that I hadn't heard about until one of our team members had mentioned it to me. And it's like, you know, impacting lives, you know, thousands of miles away from us.
How does that feel, man? Like, how does that feel? Cool. Yeah, I was just going to say. You
know, but I think to really kind of like wrap it up, and like, that's like a perfect thing. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like bigger than me. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than our team, and it's bigger than our customers. You know, so it's just, it's all these little interconnected relationships that, you know, that just the way things end up happening in life. So I feel personally like really lucky to be a part of it. I feel kind of like a, you know, grandfathered curator of just trying to make sure we don't mess it up. Mm-hmm. Because it could impact so many people in both positive and negative ways. So I just feel really lucky.
That's awesome, man. Good for you. Kudos, man. Congratulations. And so I want to continue this path down, like the culture piece. Something that you do is you have a commitment to phone support where most people shy away because they think it's too expensive. I have several other I have a couple questions about that. I have other things too. You know, I'll just go into it. So I love the phone support side. It's expensive. You know it, but you still invest in it. I'd love to hear why. I'd also love to hear about why you pay for people's meals, because that's also important. And then also your 24/7, which again, people were to hear this on paper, you'd be like, dude, you're effing crazy. Why are you spending all this money on things like 24/7 support, excuse me, phone support, and paying for meals? Why is this important to you?
It just feels right. Like, you know, it's expensive. You can make a business case for the phone support and, you know, and like 24/7, like I can look at statistics around that show like why that's better for us, you know, at the scale that we are. You know, years ago, would it have been economically feasible? No. Now, yes, with the scale of our team and our customer base and so forth, you know, we're able to help people around the clock. You know, we don't have the email queues. Like, it's rare that somebody, you know, waits more than an hour or two to get a response from an email, you know, let alone a live chat that you can get instantaneously. And then phone support, it's kind of looking at the demographic of our business. It's small business owners that usually in most of their businesses, they're interacting with other people on a one-to-one basis. So again, it's kind of that whole relationship and connecting people thing. So like they want to just pick up the phone. They want to talk to somebody. They want to get their issue resolved and they want to get back to it. Or they might just need some advice. Like, frankly, most of what our support team does, we call customer solutions team. We don't actually even call them support, customer support. It's because they're providing solutions to what it is that our customers are, you know, trying to do their email. And most, a lot of it's just kind of like tips and what you might call like quasi consulting. It's like, hey, how do I do this? Or like, what do you think is the best way to do this? Giving this, you know, 3-minute summary of what they're trying to accomplish. And it just feels like the right thing because you're able to have that impact. You're able to do it quickly and efficiently and in a meaningful way where it's, you know, where you're not, you know, you're not on a live chat where you're trying to juggle 2 or 3 different live chats at the same time. And, you know, cause it's just, that's the reality of doing live chat stuff. Mm-hmm. You're not handling one chat at a time because most people frankly type really slow. Yeah, our CS team doesn't, but on the rest of the world, types really slow.
On your website, you have, maybe it was on your website, but I was doing some research on the marketing and you have like a day in the life video. Mm-hmm. And it was done a couple of years ago, but I thought it was still extremely valuable.
Yeah.
How important is the people element to your marketing? Because I went to your website, I was retargeted to by a guy that was like going like this or something like that. Awesome. Uh-huh. I see AWeber marketing materials, I see people. I go to events, I see people.
Yeah.
Most companies are hiding from that. Like, how has that been able to help you with your sales and marketing?
I think it's really key. It goes back to that, like connecting people in remarkable ways. Mm. You know, people want to be considered, they want to be seen as a person. They don't want to be seen as a number. And I think too many businesses look at like, you know, what is it? You know, it's like you're optimizing your bottom line, you're optimizing your conversion flow. And it's like, if you translate that and you put it into the reality of what you're actually doing, it's like, I want to optimize people. I want to streamline to make the people response faster. Like, it sounds ridiculous when you say it like that. But the reality is, it's like when I call up on the phone, like I don't want to talk to the automated bot thing. I want to talk to a human that can solve my problem. It's okay if you use the automated bot to get me to the appropriate human, but like I want a human that's going to understand the question, understand the business, and get my issue resolved, and so I can move on and go back to whatever it was that I was doing.
Yeah.
So it's just it just feels right. You know, like you kind of mentioned before, it's like, and I didn't really address it. Like, why do we feed everyone lunch every day? And that's a really hard thing to actually measure. One, the food's awesome. We have 3 chefs here full time that are like, make amazing meals. Like it's some of the best food in the area, in my opinion. For a while, some of our team like were rating us on Yelp, and it's like, guys, you got to take that down because we actually had people showing up here wanting to eat at the AWeber Cafe that got such great reviews, and we're like, sorry, it's not open to the public.
email automation could be like a side item. That,
yeah, really. But like when you look around the lunchroom during lunch, it's like it just feels right. Like everyone's here. Everyone's smiling, everyone's interacting. And like most of what goes on during lunchtime has nothing to do with the business, but like there's all kinds of like spurious conversations about, hey, you know, talking to someone in CS versus an engineer, you know, and kind of, you know, you get this inner flow of ideas and whatnot. And frankly, just the friendships that arrive out of it allow someone, you know, that you're playing ping pong or something after you eat, or you're playing pool or whatnot. And it's like, hey, I know Joe over there. Like I'm going to go talk to him because like I played ping pong with him the other day, and yeah, he's a big scary software engineer that's been here for a number of years and I'm relatively new, but like he was cool cause I kicked his ass at ping pong. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So it feels like the right thing to do. So it's really hard to you know, quantify monetarily, but I think in the long run, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. So absolutely. In the beginning of AWeber, you had a conversation in an interview where you were eating and sleeping your business. And I'd like to get an idea of like, how long do you think that you eat, slept AWeber, and how did you overcome that disease?
I look at that as the investment that goes into getting a business off the ground. You know, I was really lucky to have done this at a time in my life when the risk was relatively low for me personally. You know, to look back on, like, would I do this? Would I make the same decisions I made 20 years ago now? No, I have a family, I have a house, you know, I have kids, you know, like I wouldn't take the same kind of risks that I did 20 years ago. You know, and I don't have the kind of time to dedicate to, you know, eating, sleeping, breathing, you know, work. That went on for probably a good, like at least the first 3 years was like, I ran everything. I had almost 2000, we had almost 2000 customers before I hired a single person.
Wow.
So, you know, think writing code, you know, answering the phones, answering emails from customers, that sort of thing. Live chat wasn't a thing back then. So, you know, so it was at least 3 years where it was really like rock solid, like, you know, a good like 15 to 18 hour days. Like I woke up, I rolled into the chair, I went to sleep. I was rolling right out of the chair.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that, I'd say it was another, you know, from start of the business to the time where I felt like I could kind of walk away a little bit and be less, you know, full time, like not even, well, I've always been full time, but like less like overtime, I should say.
Yeah.
Probably a good like 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And
put it in a perspective though, that's what it takes in order to build like you do.
And then even then it was probably, you know, it wasn't until we probably hit our like, you know, 10 to 12th anniversary before I was like, yeah, we got this. Like I got a team that it's like, I can disappear for a week or two and like not really worry about it at all.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's stages and you'll have ups and downs where you feel like everything's solid. And then you're just like, no, my hair's on fire, you know? So I keep it short on purpose. So I don't tear it out at times. Well, I think
that's really powerful to say, because you're giving a realistic time frame. I think a lot of people, when they start businesses or even when they're in the business now, they expect instant success.
Yeah.
Yes, successful now, but it took 20 years.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think couldn't be more happy to hear making it real to us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
It's both an epic journey from the highs that happen from it, but there's also a lot of lows of things where it's like you can't picture it getting any worse.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as a founder, like you don't often have a network of people that you can go to. I was really lucky over the years that I had a network of folks that I could go to that were, you know, other business owners that experienced those same highs and lows and could give, you know, feedback and advice and how they handled those same sort of situations when they encountered them. So that was really great. And that's, again, like, you know, lean on that network, really develop that network. And who I lean on over the years has evolved and changed as the business has changed. I've not, you know, you definitely have those sleepless nights at times, but it's like everyone says, like, you're an overnight success in 20 years.
Yeah. Well, kudos to your overnight success that took 20 years.
Yeah.
I do have a couple more questions.
Sure.
Something in particular that intrigued me was your checklist. And I'm curious to see if you still use a checklist to date. And because I know in the beginning you had this like massive checklist that the massive checklist that you were constantly just checking off. Do you still use the checklist?
Yeah, I like live in OmniFocus, which is like one of those, you know, to-do management apps. I live in it. Like it's like literally the first thing I look at in the morning, and it's the last thing I look at before I go to sleep, because I'm organizing what it is that I want to do the next day or the next week. You know, and I use it for every facet of my life. My wife and I actually even have checklists that we share back and forth. Like the honey-do list is electronic. She knows if it doesn't get electronic, it doesn't get done. But it's, yeah, no, I very much live my life by checklists. So
very cool. So anybody listening, go ahead and use OmniFocus. Great, great app. Also made by a great team. One of the final questions, and I have a picture I want to show you, this will be my final technical question. You were on a recent interview, you had this conversation about how friendly you are with your coworkers and your employees. And you brought up the story behind, like, you know, playing ping pong and stuff like that. So I was curious to hear how you find that balance between boss and friend. Because I'm talking to you, you seem like an incredibly nice, fun guy, but there's also that element of like serious business owner, which I'm sure we all have. So yeah. I'd love to hear that balance. Like, how do you find that balance of like being friendly, but at the same time being CEO?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a difference between being friendly and being a friend with someone, like being friends with someone. I try to keep my personal life and my professional life very separate. Like my COO and I, who we've worked together for, you know, 15 plus years now. You know, we hang out, I do some car racing and that sort of stuff on the side. And like, we've gone to car races together and we go to various events together, that sort of stuff. But like, I don't like much beyond that. Like, even he and I don't really hang out that much, you know. Like, we'll go go-karting with like a bunch of the folks from the team. But like, for me, that's like a business function that I'm going and I'm having fun with the team. But like, it's all team members from the office. And I very rarely am including like my like outside the office friends in that equation. And there's definitely times where like you have to, you know, you got to sit in a room with somebody and you got to give them a performance tweak on whatever it is that they're doing. And I think it's, you have to set really clear expectations. And sometimes you have to, like, I'll physically say like, hey, I'm putting on the CEO hat right now. You know, this is my feedback. This is my expectation. This is when I need you to do it by. Like, I'm not joking. Get it done. You know? And I think that there's a time and place for everything. I don't think you don't have to be mean in order to get things done. At the same time, like, I can be very, you know, short and to the point, unlike maybe some of my answers to these questions. But, you know, it's not uncommon to get like a one sentence email from me, or even like a 2 or 3 word, you know, email response from me. Like, I need this by X date. Go. Because it's like, I'm answering, you know, 40 other emails and juggling some other stuff. So I think there's a difference between being friendly and being friends. And I try to keep my personal and professional life as separate as you can, but it bleeds in, you know. Got 100 plus team members, 125 team members that all live local here. I see them outside of work. They interact with my family. Like, you know, it's cool. Like, you treat people well, you get treated well in return.
Amen to that, man. This is just a fun question, because I was doing some research and I found your Instagram account and I see all these pictures of you and your tie. And
that's actually not my tie. It was kind of so I'm totally going to cut you off from whatever your question was. We'll see where that goes. So what that is that was, we were on a bus going to the Pennsylvania Best Places to Work award ceremony. We've placed in the top 100 businesses in Pennsylvania for the last 6 consecutive years, which is pretty awesome, a testament to our team. But that was, we were giving somebody a hard time that missed the bus because they were trying to get somebody else to tie their tie. So we all sent them, and basically I was being the jerk. It was all done in fun. Kind of that friendly thing. We sent them. We all sent them. We like deluged his phone with like dozens of pictures of ties.
Yeah, well, that was the thing.
Because you couldn't figure out how to tie a tie.
There's 12 pictures of yeah. just ties. So I was like, man, does this guy like ties or what?
But no, I never wear ties. And I have like a button-down shirt on today. Like that doesn't even happen all that often.
Nice. Very good. You know, well, that was my final question for you. I'd like to thank you so much for your time. Can you just tell everybody a little bit more about how they can find more about you, how they can find more about the company, and potentially become a customer of AWeber's?
Yeah, definitely. So AWeber does the email marketing automation for small businesses around the world. You can check us out at aweber.com or aweber.com/connect. We actually have a really cool bundle of tutorials for folks getting started in email marketing, a bunch of free templates and videos and such that you can get right there and download and use in whatever product you happen to use, whether it's AWeber or otherwise. So we want you to be a better educated email marketer.
Very good. Well, all links will be in the show notes, so check them out there. Tom, thank you again for your time. Have a good one, man.
Thanks. You too, Jonathan.
You've been listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, brought to you by Penji.